Blog Talk Radio.
Take a little trip.
week.
Viagotep and Better Love, you are listening to the Truth to Power show, and my name is Beverly. And we have the legendary harmonica legend, Lee Oscar, with us again tonight. And it's always a pleasure to have him on and listen to his great music. And we also have our co-host with us tonight, Eric. So let me pull up Eric, and then I'll pull my host up. Hi, Eric. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm lit, Bev. How are you?
Good. It's good to hear your voice. We missed you.
Yeah, okay. It's good to be missed. Yeah, yeah.
All right.
I'm doing well, and I mean, wow, what an honor, you know. What a great pleasure to be able to talk to Lee Oscar again and have our illustrious family and audience from worldwide listening in tonight. And I'm looking forward to get into it. You know, we want to talk about that first song that you played. We'll let Lee take us into that, but that's
okay,
pretty deep.
Never forget.
But, never forget. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, it's a great time. Great timing. Great time to have this type of show conversation and meeting with Lee. And the energy is up as usual. I'm ready, Bev. Thank you so much for holding this forum as usual. Thank you.
All right, let's pull Mr. Lee Oscar up.
I'm right here.
Oscar, how are you doing? Oh, thank you
good.
For joining us. It's an honor.
I was like a fly on the wall listening in to you guys.
Well, thank you. We listening to your
greetings,
great
Lee.
Music.
Right on. And how are you, Beverly? It's been a while. How are
you? I'm doing great. Great.
Good.
Now, can you kind of tell us about the song Never Forget? How did that come about? And that's from your new album, correct?
Well, the title of the album is called Never Forget, and one of the compositions is called Never Forget. But the album as a whole is an album that's called Never Forget. It's a memoir of my you know, as a part of my life. But it's hopefully it will echo and make the statement about humanity and that everybody hopefully will connect to. And maybe it just will add a little bit more to hopefully the potential of getting to be a peaceful world someday. I'm very pessimistic. I don't feel it's going to happen for quite a while, but I hope it will. Yeah.
Okay. And your music, you know, music and tones, that's always good. So that helps. That helps a lot. And you have two albums out, or you have one? Is it two out?
I'm sorry?
Two albums.
I'm sorry?
Of your latest music.
Well, the Never Forget album is the album that just got released to my record label called Dreams We Share. I'm not sure what you're referring to as a... I mean, there's a lot of music that's coming through coming through Dreams We Share record label. But the new release... as me as the artist on my label is the album called Never Forget, which is just got released January 28th. So just getting out.
Okay. And you also have harmonicas that has your name on it, and people can order them too, correct?
Well, my name is on it because I want it on there because I'm a manufacturer.
And that's what I'm saying. You in the harmonica business.
Well,
and how can they get
how
can they get one of those?
Well, I hope the answer without me have to answer it, it's in all the stores. I hope it's in.
Okay.
It's in you know,
okay.
If anybody out there is trying to get a Lee Oscar harmonica and you and the retail store that in your location is not open because of COVID, or they open now, mm-hmm. but they out of a mm-hmm. key or anything, they need to order it. But come back to us. Just, you know, look up LeeOscar.com, LeeOscar Monikers, and let us know if you're having a problem finding our product. But I certainly hope it'll be a good experience.
In all the stores. Okay.
It's been actually almost 40 years I've been manufacturing. And, 39 years now. And the factory in Japan that LeeOscar Monikers are manufactured, where we manufacture at, the machines got set up there, is a factory that's been operating, making harmonicas for about 104 years now. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the COVID didn't have any effect on that.
Oh, it had an effect on
so
everybody.
That's,
right. That's included. We're on the planet, too, so it affects us. If you would like me to tell you that, I can just tell you, Beverly, that when the COVID first hit, almost like 2 years ago, the sales for LeeOscar Monikers, what was a supply, a 3 months supply. We always have like a 3 month supply, so we don't, run out of product. Nobody's back ordering. That same amount of supplies that usually last 3 months was going to last 3 years. That's how slow sales went for about a year. COVID, breeding instrument, and people it dropped in sales because of the nature of this type of instrument. But now we back up. We back up. Our sales are wonderful. It's back up to what normally was each month, which is good.
Excellent. That's great. Well, let's hear some more. I'm gonna play another tune from your latest album. Let's hear this one here. Beautiful.
Well, thank you.
Wow.
And yeah, go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, yes, yeah, Lee. Thank you for coming and sharing time with us again. Lee, could you talk to us about that? This project, Never Forget.
Oh,
I read an article. Yeah, please. I read an article on the deep story behind some of the content. Can you please share that with us about the Holocaust?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm Jewish, and my mother and my Aunt Judy, my mother was the older, her younger sister, my Aunt Judy, they survived the killing camp in Stutthof. That was the death camp they were in. And my grandmother got the gas chamber, their mother. And basically, this is a memoir. This album is a memoir called Never Forget. And it's really not about being Jewish. It's really not about the killing camp. It's about the after effect. It's really about humanity. Because humanity, history repeats. I don't care, African-American, Native American, I don't care what culture and what race and whatever. As human beings, I think the most important thing that have to be recognized to start with, if you want peace in this world, is to realize that there's commonalities. We are like 99% the same commonality. I mean, you don't have a different animation or anatomy if you go to a doctor who's based on different race or anything. So the commonality is what we got to focus on. And if we can focus on that, maybe the fear will go away in just the differences in some people. You know, let's get rid of the fear. And once the fear is by recognizing commonality, then you can start appreciating the beauty about, you know, the little nuances that are different between different cultures or race or whatever. But our commonality, we need to recognize. So it's not a Jewish problem. It's not a Black American problem. It's a human problem. And the blame on anything that's horrific, like a killing camps and all that stuff that goes on today, just like yesterday, continues on. The blame is on humanity. No one human being, I don't care how evil, like Hitler or Mussolini or anybody, not want to get into politics, names, but it doesn't matter who the individual is. No matter how bad they think, they couldn't do anything without the support of humanity. So the blame is on humanity buying BS, buying propaganda that will make them feel like, oh, we are good. The blame is on so-and-so over there. You know, always so conquer and divide, and what people buy into is a human problem that we need to resolve sooner or later. And may my album, my memoir, Never Forget, maybe just add just a tiny bit, even it just hopefully adds something towards people thinking about the horrific things that has happened. Maybe a lot of people don't even know or won't believe that something that terrible has actually happened to others. But it's not to be denied. It is a true. It is a true reality. And me as an artist, if I went to the grave and didn't express those deep things I have in me that has haunted me and scared me for life, anti-Semitic and all that, if I didn't express those fears and what I've been dealing with, why I left home young, even why it's filtered, second generation I am from the killing camp. If I didn't express that in my music and this memoir, and I went to the grave dying, I would be ashamed to call myself an artist. So as a true artist, I must express what's in my heart and soul. We all must celebrate each other's journeys and recognize we have a lot in common and we must never forget. So that's what it's about.
And you can feel the music, too. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a journey.
But
it is a journey, for sure.
You just played called Song for Sri. Sri was I just went through a divorce. She's, I was married. But, again, it's not about Sri. It's about that particular experience that represents anybody's experience is the orbit of love. You know, It's like its own orbit. When we're in love with somebody else and have a relationship, it's like its own orbit. It works in its mm-hmm. own universe. I had to put that in my memoir as part of this journey, catching up with how I feel today.
Yeah. Wow.
And Lee, what about the drawing that came with the drawing that I know you have some pretty interesting drawings that you do. The drawing that came with the album cover, how did that come about?
Well, I'm also, you know, as well as an artist in regards to sound music, I paint also. I've always been painted as much as I've done music. And in this particular project, Never Forget, I did a bunch of paintings that came out of a particular style that was unique for this project that I did. And as I was painting with this particular style I'm doing, faces started showing up, and it was really haunting me. And I felt like spirits are coming through telling me that my responsibility to tell the story. So it's part of the memoir. Yeah.
Wow, that's deep. Yeah, and that's funny that your album came out in 2022, and that's a double face, and it's a lot of correlations with you in the band. You know, the chemistry that y'all had with War. I find a lot of we can talk about that a little later. But yeah, I found a lot of twins in there. But it's exciting to have you back. I've been seeing you out there jamming, man, promoting your works. I think Beverly was alluding to the works with Lee Oscar and Friends. And man, I've been jamming that Caribbean love song. And that's what she was talking about.
Yeah. Wow.
The Lee Oscar and Friends. Yeah. I like the percussions, man. The percussions that you have on Caribbean Love Song and the one for the children, man. The percussion on that. Exactly. Yeah, man. That percussion. I like that. I like when you do work with them percussions, man. That sound live. That takes you back to the old, you know.
Percussion has always been comfort food. I mean, percussion to me is it's always been great textures. I those are elements that I always love to bring into the music. And another thing on a side note, you know, a lot of people treat drums like it's supposed to just keep time. You know, no one instrument is supposed to keep time. When we play music together, we better be all in freaking time. We better be all in the same pocket. So the drums is not responsible for that. We're all responsible to be in the same pocket if you're gonna phrase and play music. But the drums, to me, a percussion is the punctuation marks. It was like if you have a paragraph and you take all the commas and periods and exclamation marks, you take all the punctuation marks out, perhaps you wouldn't even know what most of the words are saying because it doesn't give you reference to where a sentence starts or where a sentence ends or a statement. It's the same in music. When you're playing a melody and phrasing and all that, punctuation marks are like the percussion of the drums. It defines, you know, the pockets for the melody. So, you know, it's all beautiful. It's all beautiful.
And did you know somebody released that the recording of the Ronnie Scott's Jazz Club recording in 1970 with Jimi Hendrix going back and forth with Howard Scott? Yeah. Did you download it?
What do you mean someone released it? It's been floating around like people that got a hold of it and make copies and floating around. But when you say release, what does that mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, the last time we talked on the interview, you know, we talked about that moment about somebody had a recording of it, and then the next thing you know, man, yeah, right, yeah. I started hearing it.
Yeah, and I got a copy too. Someone had burned a CD, and then they went in kind of with some apps and mastered it. It's okay. I mean, you know, what you start with was not great quality, so what you end up with is, you know, it can only be what it is. But from the novelty and the historical standpoint, That's a very important recording, yes.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Beverly, did you download that piece of music?
Yes, I did. I think it's the one with Jimi Hendrix.
Yes.
Let me see here. Okay, here it goes.
head. Some place you left when you were a child, some place you're trapped in. You realize that America is full of tobacco roads. The world is full of tobacco roads. And you know tobacco is no good.
Man, We were crazy back then.
Yeah. When you got finished with jam sections and playing like that, didn't it take you an hour or so to kind of calm your body down? Them vibes was really high.
It would take a whole night after the gig to unwind. By the time we have to go to the airport, I'm falling asleep. Yeah. No, it always takes time to unwind with, you know, you get all that adrenaline and going and that. So,
yeah.
No, the road is its own animal, from between pacing yourself when to eat and when you can't eat because you got to play, and to rest, to everything. It's road life is its own animal. Yeah.
That was high vibes. Yeah, I heard that was one of the last sessions or something that Jimi Hendrix did before he.
That was the last time he ever played. That was the jam with. And then the next day he was supposed to show up again, and his girlfriend called the club, Ronnie Scott's, while we were playing, and. And Terry McVeigh, a roadie, intercepted a call and was told that Hendricks was out. He had choked on his own vomit, and you know, he was not in good shape, and rushed to the hospital. By the time he finished playing that night, Eric split to the hospital, and I walked around with a friend of mine, Judy Wong, in London, and was told that he died. Yeah.
Wow. Well, you lived a full life because all of the great music y'all made, and nobody can do. I call that with you the harmonica rock. Nobody can rock like you when you play that harmonica. I love seeing you when you be on stage playing your harmonica.
I love Beverly, when you're encouraging me. I love your show, but I haven't lived. But one thing for sure, I haven't lived a full life yet because I'm not dead. So I got a lot more to learn. I hope we all will be around for at least another 50, 60 years, huh?
yes. But your young life, the experience you had in the music industry, it's just awesome. The music that y'all
and I was very fortunate to get through the gate to meet Eric Burton and had the opportunity finally that I came to America to make in the music business. So I was very fortunate to as ambitious as I was, there's no guarantee. So thank God I got through the gate but I can tell you, you know, those days of being a fly in the wall was a hell of an experience. But I have experienced things every day since then, and man, there's so much beautiful stuff I'm seeing. I'm so glad I'm still alive. I'm so happy to be acknowledged. I'm so happy that I got so much. I look forward to all the stuff I haven't done yet. In other words, what I have done, I've done. But what I haven't done is what it keeps me alive. I'm so inspired to get other things, off my plate and released to the world. Like this album, Never Forget, it's very important. And you told me you played Caribbean Love Song. I mean, that's not even officially released yet. That's amazing. I'm just very thankful to be acknowledged and to be on your show. This is fantastic. Thank you.
Oh, you don't know. It's great to have you here. Eric, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah. Before we leave the subject of Ronnie Scott's Jazz Club, I heard we were talking about percussion. Man, I heard Harold Brown and Papa D. Allen, man, rocking on them drums and conga drums, man. They was going in.
Yeah,
they was going in. That was bomb, man. I love that. That's a classic piece. Thank you for downloading that, Bev. And that recording actually sounded pretty good. That was in 1970. Uh-huh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying I was surprised that it came out as well as it did, based on knowing the quality originally, what I thought it was, and it was recorded, you know, right in front of me. The dude that was recording was like right in front of me on stage, on the audience, and he recording the small reel-to-reel tape recorder, you know. So it's been whatever they did, it's a hell of a lot better than it was. It's not great, but it's still a hell of a lot better. And like I said, from a historical standpoint, it's monumental, and we're actually glad that the guy recorded it, even though we confiscated the tape. Because if he hadn't been there recorded, that would have been a piece of history that we would never had on audio.
Right.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. That's right. And eerily enough, that was in 1970. Here we are in 2022. You came out with an album called Never Forget. And I heard in that Tobacco Road, I heard Eric Burden say, "You better never forget." Actually, he said it twice. He said, "We can't
never forget.
Then he said, y'all got to give me 2 minutes. He said, y'all got to give me 2 minutes. So man, that two, and I'm gonna keep bringing it up. You know, one of your best friends in the world, Lee Oscar, Charles Miller, he was born on a 2 day, man. And in June, which is the month of the twin or Gemini, he was born on the 2nd of June. And Eric Burden, May 11th. What about that for a two? May 11th, Eric Burden. How about Mr. Brown, the drummer, and Howard Scott, the lead guitar, being 2 days born from each other, both in March, 2 days apart?
Yeah.
Okay, y'all go ahead. I got a bunch of more, but yeah, that's enough for now.
not just 2 days apart, but in the same area. They both born Long
Beach. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
And it's,
yeah, absolutely.
I'm two years younger. I'm born in 48. They're born in 46. Yeah.
And he goes on and on.
That's right.
Naturally. Say, Lee, when the last time you had some peanut butter and chocolate milk, man?
Oh man, I still love peanut butter sandwiches and chocolate milk. Are you kidding? That's if I could have that as my dessert every day after a meal, I would eat it.
Right.
That's the most amazing flavor is chocolate and peanut butter. Amazing. It's an American invention.
Reese cup.
That's right. But
like a Reese cup.
That's like an older. I like the taste, but I don't like too much sugar. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we realized that B.B. Dickerson made a transition just recently. Can you speak on B.B. Dickerson, you know, his life with the band and as a friend and just as a great artist, bass player, singer, you know, can you big up B.B. Dickerson?
B.B. Dickerson, in my opinion, was a brilliant bass player and a wonderful crooner, wonderful singer, and could do both at the same time. He was one of a kind, brilliant. The unfortunate thing is, you know, as we live on the road and all that, and our lifestyles, it can take a toll. And unfortunately with B.B., he not eating properly and all that stuff, and man, it can really get you. And so unfortunately for B.B., he came across bad health, you know, with strokes. So to be quite honest, in my opinion, I mean, to dignify things, really, a couple of years he was like, you know, very not a quality of life. I mean, because he couldn't play or sing. He could barely talk. I mean, the strokes is not a friendly thing. So it really... To me, the sad part was not when he died. To me, it was like he, you know, it's a relief from the pain or he was suffering, not being able to function. The sad part to me is while he was alive and not being able to do what I know he loves doing, that's what's sad. So, you know, like a doctor once told me, he said, "Lee, when people say, well, you're going to die anyway sometime, well, you know what? If you don't take good of your health, you Now, if you are suffering with pain, that can go on for a long time before you die. And so, you know, quality of life is very important, too, not just the fact that you say you can still be living.
Right.
It's you know, B.B. Dickinson was just a brilliant artist. I just wish he didn't have some demons in him that and would felt better about himself and take better care of himself. But that's life, you know. We all know people, ourselves or others, that will struggle with health and or not eat properly or whatever. I don't want to make it a sad show, but it was sad to me before B.B. died. That's when it was sad to me, because to be a prisoner in his own body and not be able to function and do what I know he loved, playing bass and singing, that's what was sad to me.
Mm. Yeah. Wow.
And he had a wonderful son, and he has a wonderful, you know, one of his kids, one of his sons, B.B., you know, Junior. Man, he's right there for B.B. So I know that B.B. had you know, his son got his back, you know, while he was suffering in the hospital. So at least I know that was okay.
Okay. Well, let's play another tune.
All right,
here.
Let's get happy.
And then, and yeah, let's see what we got. Let's try this one here.
Oh, just
yeah.
Hello? What happened?
Hello?
Are you still there? Okay. I don't know what happened.
I can hear you.
Okay. Okay. I don't know what happened.
Yes.
But we do.
You know, Lee, we had a...
Go ahead.
We had your brother Howard Scott on a couple of months back with a Howard Scott Jr. And he was asked what was his favorite. Yeah. He was asked what was his favorite war song. And that's the one he said. He said it was Gypsy Man because of all the intricate, you know, little things that was going on. And, you know, he said just the way it came together, the chemistry that y'all had while y'all was doing
right.
it. He said that was his favorite.
Is that Howard or his son?
Yeah, Howard. Yep, Howard Scott. Yeah.
Oh, Howard said, not his son. Okay, yeah. Right on. Yeah, I mean, there's a... Man, it's just been a lot of journeys. If I don't know on your show, but if on the album Never Forget, I don't know, but I may suggest I maybe the track World for Peace. Do you have that?
I can download it. I'll have it up in a little while. I don't think I have that.
Yeah. My album Never Forget. I don't know. So you don't have a copy of the album or nobody sent it to you?
I got the music though. It's on YouTube.
Good.
And I got your cover. It's, you know, I posted the cover of the album so the people could see the cover of the album. And I downloaded the song.
The track World Peace. I think that might be a piece. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the call-in number here is 323-642-1586 and push the number 1 if you'd like to talk to Lee Oscar, the legendary Lee Oscar. He's here with us tonight. And I have 802-989. 802-989.
Oh, that's
D-Row.
Hey, what's up? Yeah, what's up, family?
What up, D-Row?
Hey, greetings, Bev. Greetings, Eric. Greetings, Lee. Greetings, Lee.
Thank you.
This is D-Row from Dialworks Radio, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
All right,
myself,
man.
I'm doing good.
I was so excited to see you back on the show. Yeah, man, I just wanted to reach out and, you know, send my appreciation for the music, for the vibes over the years and the legacy. And we definitely want to have you back on Jawworks Radio as well. So let's keep in contact with this new album out and stuff. We definitely want to get the word out on our side as well.
Yeah, man.
That was awesome last time. Such a good vibe,
yeah.
Man. That was one of my
I'm just glad you guys are still around and you guys are still doing what you do and it really helps support everybody from a fan to the music to the people who produce music. You guys are great. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Lee, can you speak on one thing I respect about you is you're really diverse, you know, like the music and you got a entrepreneurial kind of spirit too, like what you did with the Lee Oscar Harmonica Company. And I know like right now, if you notice around the world, there's all these people who all of a sudden nobody can hire people. A lot of people don't, you know, it's not as simple as people don't want to work. People are kind of waking up. They don't want a boss man overlooking the shoulder. They kind of want to do their own thing, follow their passion. I wonder if you could speak on, you know, like what you went through starting up, you know, Lee Oscar Harmonica Company and how that whole thing came about.
Well, you know, first of all, I have to tell you that nobody hires me, so I had to hire myself. You know, it starts with that. And there's a saying I have. It's called VIP, and it's not meaning very important people, but the three elements that makes things click is if you start with your own vision, V for vision, then I for innovation. And therefore, thirdly, you can be persistent. So if you're into something that you're not really feeling, you just think it's a good way of making money, it's a good business to be in because others are succeeding in it, you know, it doesn't mean that everybody can succeed with it. And if you're into something because you think it's going to make money, but you're not, your heart and soul is not in it, therefore you can't be, you're not starting with your own vision. You're starting from the innovation. There's no way you can be persistent. If you are, if you're deep in it, then whether you want to work from home or you're working from an office, whatever it takes, that's what it's going to take. You do it. You know, there's, you know, I mean, anything that's real has the ups and downs like a roller coaster. And anybody who's not really in it, don't feel it, they're not going to be able to deal with the roller coaster that's going on a down. But so if you want to really do something and be occupied with something you love doing, that's the best. If you're going to do a job that is, requires skills that that you may have that they expect you to provide on a job, on a working place, and you're not in love with it, it's tough to be persistent. It's tough to tolerate. That's why people take vacations. They take vacations to vacate from what they expected to do that they're not in love with. But if you are, if you're in love with something, then it doesn't matter if you have to travel to an office. Like if the new normal is, hey, we don't have to be in the office every day. You know, that's a sad thing for people who invest in real estate for office buildings. If everybody thinks now it's we can get away with working for a company without going to an office, I don't think that's really realistic. I mean, the technologies we can all talk on Zoom and everything. That's all wonderful compared to technologies that weren't there before. But I think it's still important to be in the same room. You look at each other face to face because you might brainstorm ideas. That it doesn't have to be an epic every time you're going to have a meeting. So I think, yeah, COVID has tested people in a lot of different aspects of life. But when the COVID is less threatening, I think a lot of people, are, unfortunately for them, they're going to have to come back to and work in an office part of the time, if not all the time. It's, you know, I myself, I have employees in my company. They all work out of their homes. But sooner or later, when my office feels it's safe, I want my staff to come into the office, not just work from their home, even though we can communicate every day. It's much better if you can see the faces and you can brainstorm ideas, because that's the reality in real business, is that you're always creating ideas and always moving forward, and, you know, no guarantees. There's, you know, nothing is permanent, so you got to be creative and constantly be flexible with whatever is necessary. So, yeah. Boy, that was a mouthful.
That was good. I appreciate that, man. Yeah.
Hey, Lee went up. Oh,
ahead,
I'm sorry. I'm
ahead.
Sorry. Go ahead, y'all.
No, go ahead.
When Dave and I interviewed you on Jowers Radio, Lee, we talked about major and minor chords, you know, dominant chords.
Yeah.
And Can you take us through some of that? Can you explain some of your different harmonicas and the different blues and the reggae vibes? You know, yeah, take us through that a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I make different tunings. Literally, I make four different tunings. That doesn't mean keys. The tunings means there's different modes or scales, and I make them in all keys. Those they're four different tunings. So I make major diatonic, which is the typical scales that you normally hear people use a harmonica, whether it's rock and roll, blues, or whatever. And then I also make a natural minor, which is great for Latin, reggae, you name it. I make harmonic minor, which is great for many international, I call it international blues. I make that because it's great for all different genres of music in the minor mode other than American music, like even a tango or some reggae and all that. And then I make what I call a melody maker, which is great for jazz, African, clave, great for R&B, rhythm and blues, and reggae and all that. Now, why are these different tunings? I refer to different genres of music is because genres of music is basically the characteristic of different modes. So, for example, a lot of people like to play a train thing on harmonica. You know, that's the funny thing. Hey, how do you play that train thing? I like to play that. Well, so if somebody's honking on a major diatonic playing a train thing, two things it's about. One is it's a Mixolydian scale, so it has the minor seventh, which is going to keep it on the ground. A train, you don't want to get derailed, so you got to stay on the dirt if it's going to stay on track. And secondly, if you're playing a 2-4 rhythm, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, that's the accent rhythmically that with two chords, maybe a G chord, a G seventh chord, a G B D F, not an F sharp, but an F, so it's a G seventh chord to a C chord, let's say, and you're playing this train thing in 2-4. Now, my question is then to anybody out there who knows music theory at all and that, or you're being a musician, creator. Now, how would you make the train now move backwards? You see, it's the same accent, the 2-4, 1-2, 1-2. The wheel just same accent. It just goes reverse. But how would you make it sound like it's going backwards? And the answer is you flatten the thirds. So instead of a G seventh chord, play a G minor seventh chord. So instead of G B D F, so it's G B flat D F. There's your G minor seventh chord. And then instead of C E G, make it C E flat G. So the third again on C is an E flat. And you play the same accents in 2-4, like dakadika, dakadika with the minor, now the train's gonna go backwards. So the beautiful thing about music, no different than painting, is like the optical illusion, no different than music. We can shape the landscape of the sound to make it move forward, make it move, feel like it's going backwards, or make it feel like it's going up, or make it feel like going down. I mean, it's very powerful. So to understand music theory, or to understand how these tonalities can shape different ways of moving music, it's really very, very powerful. And I recommend anybody who's really into music to study modes and understand why you have reggae, why you have the African clave. Now, Bo Diddley played a clave accent. Da, 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 da. That's a clave. But if you're playing the mode like Bo Diddley did, which is a Mixolydian scale, it ain't going to be African. So the same accents that is a clave, if you play with let's say an A minor seventh chord to a G major seventh chord, that's a Dorian scale. That's a Dorian. That would make the rhythm, those same accents move differently than the way Bo Diddley played. So it's very powerful when you understand the elements of music, melody, harmony, and rhythm. They all influence each other. And last, I want to say rhythm is not just the drums or the accents. Rhythm, like I said before, is the pocket it's in. So the harmonies, it's the influence of the harmonies and the accents. You know, everything affects each other, and that's what makes the characteristics of different genres of music.
Mm. Yeah, all wow, right. That was in the pocket right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right on, that was tight. Okay, go ahead, Beth.
All right, and I'm going to put on World for Peace.
Oh, you're good.
like that. It's got a different sound to it.
Thank you, Beverly.
And it's soothing. Yeah, I like that.
Thank you.
It sounds great.
And one of the singer in there, the spiritual singer in there, there's a few different vocals in there, different people. But the actually the guy who was singing the spiritual singer there, he's a spiritual singer from the streets in Tel Aviv that I got on a recording in a Tel Aviv studio. My friends got for me to put on this this track to make the story complete. And he basically mm-hmm. saying in Israeli, he's basically saying may God have mercy on everybody. Basically, that's the prayer. Mm. And then,
okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
I think Dero had another question, Beverly.
Go ahead. His line is open.
Oh man, I'm just enjoying these vibes.
Now that was soothing. That was really soothing.
I love that last tune. See, I'm out here meditating, man, and that was, it was like you read my soul by playing that tune. So that was sweet.
Oh.
Lee, the only thing I would ask, I chimed in maybe a half an hour ago, so I'm not sure if you guys already covered it, but I wonder if you have a chance to bust out your harmonica and, play something live.
I didn't bring him. I'm in my home office. I didn't. I can certainly take a minute if you want to. When you're playing something else, I can break away and just.
Okay.
Yeah, I can. I let me go and get one right now. Just a second. One second.
Okay. So I put.
I got one here. So the tune Never Forget itself, the composition itself, Never Forget, the melody is this. It's a very, this composition, I'm going to play just the melody, is Never Forget is crying out, basically, for pleading, may this never happen again. We must never forget. And it's like this. If you got reverb, put some reverb on me playing, if you can. Let's never forget.
Yes. Never forget.
Pull up. Man. Live on Beverly Hills Radio in Detroit.
And part of Song from Mom is this one. That's just a little bit of that.
Okay. Sounding good.
Did you put some reverb on it? No?
No some reverb. Echo chamber. That's what we need, some echo, huh? Some reverb. Hey, Lee.
Reverb.
Hey, Lee, while we on this subject.
Reverb.
Yeah. While we on that subject, can you talk to us about that, let's see, what is it, Slipping in the Darkness? Y'all met Bob Marley and the Wailers, and he told y'all, yeah, my band is like y'all band, but he was using y'all music in his music. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't get to know Bob Marley well. I mean, I met once, and some of the other guys, I think, a few times. But basically, he was saying that before he had his hit, before it really started happening for him here in the United States, you know, he was in Jamaica. He used to play all the war stuff. That was what he first started with, and then it became, you know, his own stuff. But we were in awe. I mean, when we first heard Bob Marley, we didn't know that he had any association or knew anything of us. We were just, all of us were big fans, blown away by, you know, we love the reggae. We love the vibe he does. And then we come to find out after when we finally met, we were in Europe. While Woodstock was going on, we were in Europe performing, and we were on the same bill with Bob Marley and also Kiss, the band Kiss, believe it or not. And we were kicking a soccer ball around between our bus and there and his bus. And that's when he said that your band is like my band, or he made some remarks that he was very influenced at. And then later on, we heard Stand Up For Your Rights, and that was taking his melody, Stand Up, you know, For Your Rights. That was the melody from the melody line that me and Charles Miller played in Slipping in the Darkness. Bid up, bid up, bid up, up, bid up. That was a line that me and Charles created, and he took that line and wrote a song called Stand Up For Your Rights.
Man, nobody know about that right there. That's legitimate history. Thank you for that. Wow.
You're welcome.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people, unfortunately, like Bob Marley, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, a lot of people die very young. And I have my thoughts why, you know, it's almost like suicide, or it's like, you know, you get... The world puts you on such a big pedestal that you you there's so much expectation that, you know, and you're just another human being who just maybe got through the gate and you got some great music and people are responding. But some people, their success becomes so big to other people that that when they're put on the when these artists are put on a pedestal, a lot of them are scared, man. I mean, you know, I mean, you get on stage and you don't feel like doing that song. You don't feel like burning a guitar. And yet you have to if you don't want people to boo at you. That can cause problematic things. You know, Bob Dylan was one of the few people that, in my mind, that was brave enough, had enough courage, if you will, you know, or was ambitious enough to say, screw it, I want to play electric guitar. I'm not going to play my acoustic. And people were booing Bob Dylan. But you know what? He continued to do what he loved, and that's why he's still here and being respected. And other people die young because they're so – that the mark is so high in what's expected on them, and they want to move, grow with their music, not stay stuck and stale. So it becomes a syndrome of disasters. I mean, it's sad. We should all, as artists, be allowed to grow. We have a fiduciary responsibility to express what we feel as we feel it. That's what an artist is supposed to do, not try to mimic something else we did and expect to do the same thing over and over and over again.
Right. Yeah. That's. I mean, because the artists are very creative. That's what music is about, and that's what people enjoy, that creativity that is there.
Right. Right.
And,
the magic
and maybe
is the magic.
Yeah. Go ahead, Lee.
No, magic, I was just going to add to it. The magic to me is when I play, when we play in the moment, we're trying to reach. It's not a monologue. You're trying to work through it in what you're expressing. That's when people can feel magic. Not when it's perfect and everything feels like it's so polished and you've all got it all worked out. That ain't magic. That's already worked out.
Right.
There's nothing mysterious.
Right.
There's nothing naive. There's nothing stimulating feelings. It's all figured out, and it's a matter of a fact rather than a matter of feeling. And facts do not work in music. Feeling works in music.
Yes. And so that's how come another person can hear. You could be playing, and I could be in the audience, and I mean your notes and your it's just a touch something inside of me. You know, you can really, really feel it because you are into it. You putting the feelings into it is you.
That's right.
That's probably why it come across so strong.
That's right. Because everybody, whether you think you know music or not, or just because you don't know music, that doesn't mean that the real truth is that if anybody can feel when there's magic, you can feel it. You can feel when something's genuine.
Yeah.
You can feel when it's not honest, you know. And we all have those intuitive instincts. And if it's something that's going to poke at you or something that's going to spike or connect with you or it's going to trigger your feelings, it's going to come from that energy that's magic, which is naiveness and trying to express rather than got it all figured out, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's play another tune from your new album here, Never Forget.
Cool.
And so let's play this one here. Yes, that was Goodbye. That's from Lee Oscar, new album, Never Forget.
Yeah.
Hey, Lee, I've been playing that Steppers version of Haunted House, the Chicago Steppers.
Oh, yeah.
Man, and that's a hot one right there. I'll be checking them out, man. They be really stepping to that, too. That's a nice jam right there.
I hear all about that, man. I hear that all the time. And by the way, I got my copyrights back on Haunted House, among some other compositions. I finally got it terminated and got my copyrights back. I want to do whatever I can to support any of these things that are using like Haunted House, because it's a fun tune. When next time you do something with it, let me know ahead of time and I might just add something to it or do something even more interesting with that tune for whoever you're entertaining it to. Yeah.
So
there you go. All right. We got you.
What about if we play it now? That's yes. Oops.
Haunted House?
Yeah, I want to hear. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
You remind me of a haunted house I once was in.
Okay.
Flash it.
All righty. Let me see. I just lost my space here. Here it go. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You guys notice it went ah without the men. It went ah without ah. It didn't say amen. It just went ah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was good stuff of music.
That was Chambers Brothers, the vocals. That was Joe and some of his siblings singing on that.
Okay.
The Chambers Brothers.
Okay.
That was fire. Hey Lee, how did you become to meet you, Masekela?
I met you, Masekela, when I came to LA. Somebody helped me pay with a car, drove down to L.A. To meet a guy named Doc Siegel. He was the main engineer at Gold Star Studio, which that studio doesn't even exist anymore. It's been torn down. But that was like one of the big studios in Hollywood. And I went there to see if I could get some, find a deal or something. I had some acetate with me or something, I recall. And Doc Siegel had listened to it and happened to be right in the studio and was Stu Levine, who was a partners with Hugh Masekela, a business partners and producing and that. And at first Doc Siegel was said to Stu Levine, like I overheard, he says, "Hey, this kid, you got to hear this kid. Let me take you in the other room." And Stu Levine said, "No, I don't want, he was like," then finally he did. And he came back out and I guess he was excited about it. So he hit me up with he gave me a phone number and an address, and he said, meet over here tomorrow, whatever. And that was Hugh Masekela's place on King Street or where it was, up Sunset Boulevard. Matter of fact, when I walked up to the house, I knocked on the door, the lead singer years ago. He was the one that came up with "Give Me Five" in that. I'm blank the name. Help me out. Do you know the saying "Give Me Five"?
Oh, no.
You know who came up with that, right?
I don't recall.
He was a band leader and a singer. I'm just blanked out. Anyhow, never mind. His daughter was married to Hugh Masekela at that time. And when I came knocking on the door, the ceiling caved in. It was an old Victorian house just then. But I met Hugh Masekela with Stu Levine. And then they, they got me off the streets and put me in this place, a house. And I brought this band down from San Francisco to stay at this house where they set us up. And we were going to get some stuff going, but it didn't work out. I'm Hugh Masekela. I love his music. I love him as a human being, both him and Stu Levine. And I got to see Hugh Masekela after many, many years, because he moved back to South Africa when I did a concert in Johannesburg a few years back. It was the concert is Joy of Jazz. Joy of Jazz South Africa, Joy of Jazz Johannesburg, South Africa. Anyhow, I was playing with Lee Oscar and friends, and Hugh Masekela was also there, so I got to see Hugh Masekela before I got up and played. And following me was people Bryson, and I didn't realize, that was really amazing, because I didn't realize my third solo album called My Road, Our Road, actually was really a huge seller in Africa, because I didn't get statements. I had no idea how well it was doing. And I found out it was sold over 700. I found it sold over 700,000 units without me knowing. Yeah. You know? Not bootleg,
wow.
Sold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was all the indigenous, mainly the indigenous people of Africa that were big fans. So it was it was quite enlightening, that album, yeah. But I met Hugh Masekela, and then I got to see him after the show again. We had a few minutes to talk, and that was it. And then he passed away recently after that. soon after that. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. At least I wish I had an opportunity to really play with you, Master Caleb, because I, but it just didn't work out because, you know, I live in the United States and he had moved back to South Africa, but he was a wonderful, wonderful human being and a great, I loved his music.
And how did you get into the music business? I mean, did you go or was it something that just happened at the right place at the right time, or did you go after it?
Well, all of it. I went after it, and still you mm-hmm. just, it, no guarantees, and it happens at the right time, right mm-hmm. place. All of that comes mm-hmm. in with it. I came to the United States. I came to America to make it. I wanted to make it in the music business. So it was my mission back in 66 when I first came to the United States to want to make it in the music business at 18. And I was on the streets and, you know, nothing, it was tough. But when I finally met Eric Burton in Los Angeles, and that was after Hugh Masekela and Stu Levine, I met Eric Burton and we hit it off where he mm-hmm. wanted to put a new band together, and I was there with him, and best is history, became War. And the War was an amazing experience for me, along with Eric Burton, who would just make stuff up right there on the spot on stage, and we would just jam every night and create stuff, and that was perfect mm-hmm. for the way I play because I love being in the moment, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. That's the key. People could just learn how
yep.
to be in the moment. That's where the power is at. That's why y'all were so successful, too, because you played and people
yeah.
felt you.
Yeah.
And it was in the moment.
Well, people definitely can feel and relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
But the
yeah.
business itself,
yeah.
there's no guarantee. So we were very fortunate in some aspect. We were very fortunate that we that, you know, our records got to do what it did. You know, we weren't very fortunate in getting paid. Oh, mm-hmm. the name War has been taken away from us because the ex-manager got claimed
yeah.
with the trademark, and the federal mm-hmm. judge believed Bart the story. And we were, so legally, I'm not allowed to say War. I'm not allowed to say formally of War. I'm not even allowed to spell
mm-hmm.
out R-A-W, Raw. If you hold Raw against
wow.
the mirror, they will say War. But
yeah, I heard that.
But I can. It's just the way
yeah.
the business is. So
yeah.
Too bad.
Yeah. And I just seem like it was a lot of that going on. I don't know if it's still that way today. But talking to people that was in the music industry back in the day, you know, you hear a lot of stuff going on with the money and people not, you know, getting
yeah.
what they deserve.
Yeah.
With them.
You know, I don't think it's any different than any other business in the sense that it's all human beings are human beings and there's bad
mm-hmm.
seeds in anywhere. But I think
mm-hmm.
that I think one thing about the music business or any kind of, whether you're an actor or a musician or anything that's creative, it's a whole different mindset in how money revenues are made, because intellectual property. You know, if you have copyrights or, you know, however your business, whatever you tie to as intellectual property, you know, those things are not a contract, a guarantee. You know, those are things that you just hope that the revenues keep coming in, because as long as they play it and if you know where to collect. The other thing about business is, to be honest, is knowing, taking responsibility and knowing when you earn something, if you didn't earn it if you didn't know how to claim it. So there's a responsibility that I think a lot of people in the music business don't take. They love playing music and they expect everybody else to take them around on a silver plate. And that's not reality, because the person who's into the business, who may be managing you, he may not give a hoot about your music. You're a commodity. Maybe through that manager.
Right.
I mean, in other words, you really got to take responsibility yourself, at least to be honest and know how business works, how the music business works, how copyrights, not to be smart and brilliant at it, but at least take responsibility
mm-hmm.
to understand how it works, if that's business. And so I think a lot of people who don't take responsibility, at the end of the day, they lose out because they didn't know what to claim. A lot of times people did very well, not because they knew how to claim, because somebody was working with them, was very nice, and looked after them too, got their back too. But in our case, the management for us didn't have our back. They were just caring about their own back. And we were a little naive because we expected everybody to be loyal and be honest. And so by neglecting really understanding how the business worked, we weren't as efficient in knowing how to claim. And when we finally caught up and how it's supposed to work, we got screwed. That's all.
Yeah. And that's why I've always heard, I hear a lot of people say, you know, it's show business, you know, you got to know at least the business part. And that's like you say, that's like with anything. How are you going to play basketball or baseball if you don't know the game, the rules, and how to play it?
You don't know the business. Yeah, you might be a great pitcher, a great batter, and everybody else is going to be happy that they got you on the team and you're winning and you're making money for everybody. But what about your own essence? You think everybody else is going to look after you more than yourself?
Right.
If somebody looked after me more than I look after myself, I wouldn't even be able to appreciate it.
That's true. So, I mean, and there's so many people, you know, and it's a blessing to be in that music business as long as you have been in it, you know, it seems like that most people don't last long in it, and it affects their health and everything else.
Yeah.
So to be able to have longevity in it.
No, I'm in it for the real reasons and for my art itself. Like I said before, I'm an artist, and you literally would have to lock me up and. I would be useless. I would not be able to function if I didn't have my occupation occupied with what I love doing. I mean, I'm very good at business and marketing and all that stuff because I love it, but it's because it ties to something I'm actually in love with, and that's my arts that I do. And so to protect it or to give it a chance to find a home, which is no guarantees. It's never easy, no matter how good your music or your paintings are. You got to work it, and hopefully it connects with. So you have to market and promote. It's all you know. Nothing happens automatically, but it's all taking responsibility and to live up to and protect what you really put your heart and life in and soul into. You know, so you got to make it work.
Yeah. And like you say, marketing does that. I know that should play a major part in it, because you can have a good product, a good sound, but if nobody hear it, well, you know, what good is it?
Exactly.
So,
and you know, the thing is, though, most people, meaning including myself, and I would include anybody, most people. Don't buy products. They bought the product, but actually they bought the story. And then they use the product, and if the product don't live up to the story, they're upset. If they buy the story, the story that was promoted for the product in the marketing sense better be pristine to what the product can do. Because people get excited by the story, and the product better live up to it. The product can be great, but the story was still not the story that were appropriate. That's why salespeople should never be allowed to market. Never hire a salesperson to do the marketing. Hire a builder to build your house. Hire an architect to design the blueprint. Hire marketing people or do his marketing to design the program. Then get the salesperson to follow the program or get the builder to follow the blueprint. But if you have the salesperson sell it, they're going to tell any story to get a sale, and people are going to be happy because they love the story, but now they got the product. The product is disappointed compared to the story. Now the sales guy didn't do the right job.
Yeah. And that should also be kind of tough on you, too. Like, if you have a major hit, and then you got to try to keep that. The next one, you try to keep it to be a major. You know, you just trying to stay up on top. That should be a lot of pressure, too.
Well, you have a radio show, and YouTube with ratings, the same thing. Everything, everybody is rating everybody.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Got you. Yeah, I got you.
I mean, you have a show, and people come and listen to it, and you have a very unique show because it's so laid back. It's like conversations mm-hmm. and. I think your fans that listen to your show enjoy that kind of a pace. That's very unique, rather than some DJ talking at the audience, you know, and
yes.
on steroids.
Yeah. Oh, right.
This is very laid back.
It feels so commercial like, you know.
You make me feel like we're all on the same couch in the living room talking. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, good. That's how
we are. We on Beverly's porch. Beverly's porch.
Yeah, that's who we say we on a porch.
just loving it. I know y'all like spontaneous and just just on the cuff magic. So let's do some of that right now. Lee, I know nobody will believe that we never talked about this. This ain't made up. The last time you was here, there was a young lady called in. Her name is Mama AZ. She said that she used to have a duster. I want to say it was a duster. And she used to drag race it. And when she used to play that song, Lowrider, she used to say, boy, the people used to have to watch out, boy, because she about to roll them, you know what I mean, in her duster with her song playing Lowrider in it, okay? But here go the main thing, Lee Oscar. She had a Mexican from Mexico paint a crab on her duster, right? She had a crab painted on it. Big up Mama AZ.
Okay.
Now, Lee Oscar, will you please tell the audience how the song Lowrider came about the night when you and Charles Miller went on a job?
Oh.
Can you tell us about that?
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay. All right. Now, that particular night, Charles and I decided while the rest of the band was in the studio, you know, just tracking and jamming, Charles and I decided to go down to the Santa Monica Pier with some tequila and just sit there and drink tequila, and I convinced Charles Miller that if you're going to hunt for catch crabs, they're nocturnal, so we go there in the evening and hang out through the night and on the pier and have some drink tequila and catch some crab, and we were spending a few hours. We didn't catch anything. Then when we drove back after been drinking alcohol, we drove back to the studio. And when we walked in, there was this one track, which was the basic track for Lowrider that, you know, Harold and Howard and Phoebe had just played. And then Charles would start singing Lowrider. Man, it's just like, and then I did, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, you know. So, and then we overdubbed that, and then they worked on the lyrics to add more verses, and that became Lowrider. That became the tune. Charles Miller he was the Lowrider guy. Yeah.
Wow, that was like,
man.
Everybody had some Lowrider cars back then too.
You know, the interesting thing about Lowriders is that's an American phenomenon. And think about this, kids, you know, kids that go into a junkyard and get salvage, you know, different parts from American cars, Chevys, Fords, whatever, and they take all these things and they build this beautiful machine. They're welding and soldering, and I mean, it's amazing. These kids, these Chicano kids who started this trend and did this stuff. And if And here's my example about humanity. Like I was talking about Never Forget the album. As Jews, we've been persecuted for hundreds and hundreds of years. So there's been, you know, after 6 million were murdered in World War II, you know, everybody were able to communicate and said enough is enough. And we started setting up memorials to let people know what happened. When you talk about African Americans and slavery, or when you talk about Chicanos or Native Americans, that's only a few hundred years of horrific things that happened. And people just don't recover from it. People, it's so horrific that it stirs up everything you can imagine and makes it so restless and so there's nothing settling. It's total stress that people start shooting each other, fighting each other, and when you talk about the lowrider cars, if they were settled down and not so freaked out about fighting each other and realized that we got to tell the rest of the world what's happened to us, they would unite together. They could have gone to the manufacturers, the American manufacturers of cars, and said, "Look what our kids are doing with the junk that comes from your cars."
Right.
Isn't that amazing?
Right.
I mean, American and Chevy, they could be bragging about even our junk can make beautiful cars. You know, I mean, it's just amazing how positive everybody can be as human beings, as humanity for each other, once we realize there's so much commonality between us all. And we can take away the fear that people have of each other. Get rid of all that stuff. There's so much productivity, so much positive energy that can go all the way around. But the negative stuff, it just builds and builds on top of each other, and it dilutes. It doesn't add. It dilutes those beautiful things that exist at one time or another. So all I can say is, my album, Never Forget, is not because I'm Jewish. It's a memoir about humanity that happened in my family and so many millions of families. Right this minute as we speak and we're enjoying talking about music, there's horrific things always going on too. And we all got to step up and not to talk about politics, because, you know, three things. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Europe. You don't talk about, and people got to learn that in the United States. You don't talk about politics, how much money you make, religion. You don't talk about those things, but you be kind to each other and don't have fear of each other, because the commonality is so much in common that once the fear is out of the way, boy, everybody can just party together, have discussions, talk, and learn about each other's history rather than being denying it, you know? So that's my story.
Right. Yeah, but you're right on it. You're right on it. That's what's been going on. And once you can get pushed past that fear, then that's when the magic comes in, because that's when you're able to create. You're not letting because what fear does, it stops you or it slows you down.
Oh,
so you're able to keep that flow going.
Yeah. I mean, my mother and my Aunt Judy, when they were in the killing camp, I say that they had a lot of courage, a lot of guts, because every moment they didn't know if they were going to be next, either they were going to be next to put in the gas chamber, or they're going to be alive to have a job, because anybody that lived in the death camps was because they used them to build rubber boots and stuff like that, to functions. And if they were useless, they go in the gas chamber. And sooner or later, everybody goes in. So to stay alive every moment, not knowing when you're going to die and anything, that's horrific. And that takes courage to believe, to stay strong and deal with all that and still stay focused and try to be alive, you know? So when you talk about...
Do you know...
Fear,
Do you know how did that start, you know, from talking to your relatives? How did they get into that situation? You know...
What do you mean?
I'm like how Hitler, how did the people let him just... come in and just take over, or was it that he fooled them? You know, he lied to them, and they thought it was one thing, and it ended up being something else? Or did he come in and just bogart everybody?
The answer to Beverly to it is, and it's not unique. It has gone on. It goes on right now. It will always go on. Is that no one human being, no matter how bad they are, could ever do anything to that, you know, that significant. It's organized crime, and when that comes about with propaganda, you know, let's just say there could be 5-6 different news, let's say journalists or news programs. You know, there could be Fox, mm-hmm. there could be CNN, there could be this, that, mm-hmm. let's just say. And as an example, you know yourself, everybody will lean on some program that they think that's the real news. And for mm-hmm. others to say it's conspiracy, right now the rumor is it's conspiracy. Jews have something they put in the vaccination to control people. I mean, mm-hmm. it's crazy how low and how shallow and how unintelligently so many people can speak, because they buy propaganda. They buy something that says the blame is on the Jews, or the blame is on the black, the blame is on this. Everything is a blame on something to conquer and divide. We are perfectly fine. Everybody wants to lean on something so they can believe that they have the truth, and everything else is not the truth. When I saw 5 different newscasts in Europe, they were all talking about the same subject, but there was like totally 5 different spins, and every one of them is believable. There's no such thing as absolute truth. No absolute truth. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, anybody who would be open-minded and say, wow, nobody really knows the exact answer, that would be too uncomfortable for most people to live with, because most people need to feel secure by having something to lean on, as if they have rationalized what is the truth, and the other stuff is the reason why we are in trouble. You know, so it's conquer and divide. Mm-hmm. And Jews, you know, what was it that was said? Like, you know, the Jews were slaves in Egypt. You know that, like 5,000 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. We were slaves mm-hmm. to Egypt. I heard somebody say, it was the humor of it, said, Egyptians, please take good care of your pyramids. Don't let them vanish, the chariot and vanish, because the Jews are not, you're not going to get the Jews come back and build pyramids again.
mm-hmm.
Oh, you didn't understand that. You didn't understand that?
No, I didn't catch that. No, that went right over my head.
Well, the pyramids were built by the Egyptians, but there was the slaves. And who were the slaves in Egypt?
Uh-huh.
That was the Jews.
Okay.
You didn't know that?
Okay.
Didn't know that, Beverly?
No, uh-uh.
Did you know?
Not really.
So
not the total history.
Hang on. I don't want to talk religion, so I don't want to make it controversial. My point all is that there's persecutions all the way around, everywhere. And we must never forget, and we must pay attention to history and try to turn things around again so we can find commonality and take the fear away, so maybe one day there will be peace in this world rather than the controversial of, you know, my way or the highway, or, you know, you guys are the conspiracies and all these crazy notions people will rationalize is what makes it a very scary in this world. And that's the reason why these terrible things happen. I mean, the blame is on humanity for horrific things.
So you're saying that Hitler, because, you know, like we say, everything repeats itself. So you're saying that he used a lot of propaganda to get the people.
Of course.
You know,
it's all propaganda.
Okay.
His propaganda was we got to get rid of the whatever words he had that is subhuman races, and the Jews are mm-hmm. dirty, and they're smart but dirty, and the these people that he wanted a pure race. And he actually, and actually the Nazis said, we are going to get America next. You know, which and then we're going to Jews in America.
That's what I was trying to correlate. That's what I was trying to see. What we going through now, was it kind of something like how Hitler was doing back in the day when he was doing his stuff?
Hitler's not the only Hitler's nothing. Hitler's nothing. He could never have done any of this stuff if it wasn't for the propaganda and people buying the BS.
Yeah.
And it still goes on. I mean, it can't be to persecute like that and all of a sudden it's gone. When it kind of settles down, that's because people go back in their closets. And then when they think it's popular or they can speak up, then you get the truth again. And when somebody says something, believe what they say. Believe them when they tell you what they that's just how they feel and think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty scary.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I know we're dealing with something here, you know. Well, I know about Canada, and so we the trucks are here. I'm in Michigan and Detroit, so you know they all lined up, and you know the bridges is all blocked up because the people are saying they not buying, you know, the propaganda. So the people are standing up. Some are.
Yeah, but what propaganda? I mean, anything we've ever been to. In other words, they're not. A lot of people say we're not getting. We don't want to.
They don't want.
Well, but I mean, everything is propaganda. You know what propaganda means? Propaganda means to announce. You know what? Okay, in English, you use the word advertisement. I'm advertising something. You know, advertising. You know that word. Advertising, it means advice. And advice is actually the word opposite than what you use in the United States. In Europe and that, the Latin word advice or advice is the name for journalist or newspaper. Because newspapers supposed to report journalism as real news, not taking sides. And so it gives you advice in what's mm-hmm. going on. That's what we say advice. Advice. When something is a commercial, we don't call it advertisement. We call it reclame. Reclame means the manufacturer is advertising it. In other words, the mm-hmm. manufacturer is promoting it. And then people know, well, of course, the manufacturer is going to say they make the best harmonicas, they make the best cars. Well, they're going to say they make the second best or whatever. But propaganda is used in usually in Europe for politics or anything like that. But also in Europe, propaganda can also mean advertisement. If I'm advertising my harmonicas in Europe, somebody can use the word propaganda. How do you approach the propaganda for your product? You might. So the semantics and what word we use takes different meanings in the United States and in Europe. But the bottom line is that people are influenced like sheep. They lean on something that they believe is telling the truth, and that's what they're going to base their references on. And if they have a reference that is different than somebody else's reference, then there's this uncertainty. And everybody mm-hmm. will buy in on something to have the blame on somebody else, because nobody wants to take responsibility that they are the responsible and blame for it. It's always somebody else who messed the economy up. Somebody else did this. Somebody else did, you know, the Jews did it. The Jews are smart, but we can't trust them. If somebody's smart and you can't trust them, that's scary, you know. I mean, it's, you know, mm-hmm. blacks are, you know, supposed to be athletes, so everybody's stereotype is athletes. I mean, Native American, I mean, it is so terrible, all this stereotype stuff, instead of the uniqueness. Every human being individually is unique. When I grew up as a kid, they always said to me when I went to Jewish school, say, be aware, if someone says to you, oh, you're Jewish, I love Jewish people because my best friend is Jewish. Be aware, Oscar. Be aware, Lee. Don't buy that. Because what if the person has met the biggest asshole they would have? Jew, then all Jews are terrible? It's like the stereotype is what's dangerous, and people will lean on stereotypes because because that's how they can occupy sanity in their own mind. Like they're totally right, and it's this side over there that's screwing it up for everybody. So everybody's putting the blame on somebody else rather than being on the same page. That's what creates horrific things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't mean to go to politics. We said that's one of the things, but that's okay. We went there, so that's good. Yeah. Eric, you back with us? I see your line had dropped. Uh-huh.
Yeah, Beverly, can you I know a lot of people sampled the music of War or the Lowrider Band. Do you have any hip-hop samples over there that you could drop on us?
Of War?
Yeah, I think it was Don't Let No One Get You Down.
Oh,
was
yeah,
sampled by okay, yeah. Can you play that? Take a little short music break, and then we'll come back and wrap things up here for the Oscar. Yeah.
Okay. Here we go.
All right. Go right in.
Oh, that is so true.
Wow.
That is so true.
I don't remember doing that. That was the original track, but there was some other overdubs, somebody else joining. I don't know who, what. But that's me playing harmonica, and I don't remember me doing that. That's. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that.
Okay.
Yeah,
we
thank
have,
you.
Yeah. We have someone with their hand raised. Let's see. 706-202. We here
Hotep.
With Lee Oscar. Hotep.
Greetings. Hotep.
Greetings.
Hotep. Eric and Lee Oscar. I think you've been on before. He plays harmonica, right?
Yes.
That's right.
Low
Rider. Right, and he was with War, and he did a few other albums.
Yes.
You know, the thing, you know, you were playing the rappers, but this came out lately that in 2020 there were over 200 rappers died and killed.
I know it was a lot. I didn't know it was that much. That many.
Yeah, I just sent you because the Canadian Hip Hop put it out there, and then there's a YouTube out and naming all the rappers that were killed. But your guest was talking about the Holocaust and the Jews and what happened to the 6 million people that were killed when Hitler did what he did. But it's a thing to where we need to really overstand and look at our story. And the part that UNESCO did a study of all the people that were in the Atlantic slave trade from the early 1500s to the 1900s in the Atlantic slave trade. And this is an actual report. You can pull it up. UNESCO Port-au-Prince, the 1500 to 1900 slave trade, the Atlantic slave trade. And this report was done in January 31st to February the 4th, 1978. And the report came out in 1979 because I remember it. And they actually came and said the cargo that was lost to all of the European countries that was within the slave trade added up to be over 210 million in cargo that they lost. That was people, 210 million. The way that they counted what they picked up.
Yeah.
What they were saying is what they picked up and what they actually had logs and recordings of what cargo that they had in the trade. That's going from the part of picking up in the continent, transportation, and getting here, and that was what was lost, 210 million. And so in that report, because we're looking at their 6 million, and do we know about our 210 million?
That's what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I'm talking about, is that these horrific things that happens, humanity do to each other, has been going on and still going on. And it doesn't matter if it's 3 people or 3 million or 300 million. What matters is that this goes on, and when groups of people that have been persecuted don't have it together enough to tell the story, because it's so horrific, you just can't put your mind around it, because it's hard to imagine.
Right.
Sooner or later, when you get enough information, may each group tell the story. Like as Jews, we've been persecuted all these years that we were capable of doing, putting the monuments to show. May everyone have artifacts and take care of these things, so every story that needs to be told reflects about how bad humanity has been to each other. Then maybe we can learn to have commonality and find peace.
Right.
But you know, humanity is not looking after each other. You know, we're so far from that we've got a long ways to go before the real facts in history with anything horrific that was obviously, if it was horrific, they're going to want to hide it. They want it to vanish, you know, and not exist.
Right.
So we got a lot of stories that got to come up, whether it's Chicanos, African-Americans, anything. Everybody that's in these horrific things have to step up and not drive-by shooting and killing each other, need to come together and make the world know what really goes on and what's been going on. That might be a chance for peace in this world.
Right, and this is why they're having such a tremendous uproar over the critical race theory. And the thing is just what you're saying, is that once you began to put truth, okay, EJI, Equal Justice Initiative in Montgomery, Alabama, opened up maybe about 4 or 5 years ago. They opened up the lynching museum. There was over 4,400 lynchings done that they actually have record of. And the book Sanctuary that talked about the lynchings. But that what they did with this museum that they opened in Montgomery is they have the 4,400 names, and what they do is they go to the site of where this lynching took place. They do a ceremony of forgiveness and calling forth that ancestor. Then they take and put part of the earth that they were lynched on into a jar and take it to the museum and put it up. This is the earth where this person was lynched at, and so we don't forget. And so it's
exactly
the same thing, that it's never forget. And what they have in the museum is they have monuments and they have brick laid out for every name of every person and everywhere they were lynched at in the United States. And so what we're beginning to do is to begin to look at these actual facts, because these are hidden. You know, I tell people when we used to do research, you go into any university and look in the library Dewey Decimal System, and the books that you want to find on slavery and all of that, they're always in the HT section from 300 to 600, and the HT is where they hide the truth.
Mm-hmm. You know, You're absolutely right. People need to be educated instead of saying that this stuff never happened. I mean, you know, it's some of the horrific things are so horrific that any decent person would have a hard time even believing that any human beings can be that horrific or cruel. And when the Nazis were going to be exposed, because when they finally realized they were going to be defeated, whoever was left that was live in the killing camps, like my mother, my Aunt Judy, they were all being marched to these graves, these huge graves that they were going to kill the rest of it, because they want to get rid of all the evidence. And it's only when nobody could get rid of all the evidence in whatever horrific thing, in whatever culture, when it wasn't totally wiped out, you know, there's enough to maybe start seeds coming up and people speak about it. But it filters. I mean, it takes hundreds of years to even recuperate from something that takes generations. It's not like now I'm free, now I'm going to talk about it. It's just, you know, so the blame is on humanity. I mean, I'm not blaming on Hitler. That asshole couldn't do shit.
No.
Sorry if I'm cussing him. You know,
yeah,
he couldn't do anything.
He's
a crazy guy who'd be standing on the street just talking to himself. It's when people buy the BS to make them feel comfortable and, you know, and think he's going to save them and they're going to, you know. I mean, it happens everywhere. Look at Argentina. Of all the promised lands in America, Argentina was the richest. It's horrific how poor it is, because when politicians say, vote for me, I'll fix it in 5 minutes. People will buy that? They do. And somebody says, vote for me, I'll fix it in 3 years. 3 years, that's too long, you know. Vote for the guy who says 5 minutes. People will buy anything to make themselves feel good without being really, really realistic. And so propaganda can divide and conquer, and there's so little that's known, so little has been saved, so little has been preserved in history between different people and mankind, that the story is going to take time to be told. But when it all comes out step by step, hopefully one day we will have a different reality of what peace should be rather than what we're experiencing or we have been experiencing for generations.
Right, but yeah. And you're very much true, because right now in 2019 we had the epidemic of what we call the COVID and that whole pandemic.
Right.
1619.
Right.
And this country brought blankets and smallpox. Over 60 million indigenous people were wiped out. Tribes no longer
That's
exist.
Right.
And so you're looking
That's right.
at 400 years. And here we come again with another epidemic of doing what? Genocide. And so what we're doing is that we have to begin to understand. That's why those truckers are blocking the roads and saying that, you know, they're no longer going to take this, is because that was from the northern part, well, before it was Canada, all the way down to the South Americas, that they were bringing in the diseases of Europe into indigenous people in this land, because we came here before. I'm a Baraka, who was Mana Musa's brother, that was one of the richest men on the continent, came here in 1611 and with 2,000 ships that they sailed into the South Americas and part of Mexico and explored part of North America. We've got to begin to tell our story about what we did, and you were talking about the pyramids. Archaeologists now have dug up and found that the workers that was working, they didn't, because the slabs, that the size of the slabs, you couldn't make that with no mud bricks. Those were 20
yep.
ton limestones brought from a quarry across that land into that area where those pyramid of Giza, this is where they just built the Irish woman and the Chinese architect that designed the gem museum that opened last year on the day before Easter. They opened up the fourth great pyramid, where they brought all of the mummies out of the Cairo Museum to that new museum in order to begin this new mindset of training of people again, because at November they just brought Ramesses II is on exhibit in the Houston Museum. So what we got to do is begin to look at the stories and see where our truth lies in, and not the false, because half truth is a whole lie, and this is what people have been given.
Yep, yep, yep. Yes.
All right.
You know, my aunt, when Spielberg, for example, realized that whoever is still alive to tell the stories, you know, to be interviewed from the Holocaust, Spielberg sent out many different people to reach whoever was still alive. So my mother was interviewed, my Aunt Judy and I. My Aunt Judy was actually went to Stutthof, the killing camp, and I see this video where she's talking to a historian, and they both are confirming, but it's interesting. Historian knows what went on from a historic standpoint, and my Aunt Judy would say, and there was a trains over there. Yes, that's right. The train is over there. And my aunt would say, but I don't smell that stink anymore. There used to be this stink. That's right. Yes, they used to burn the flesh, and that's why the forest grows so much, because all the blood. So one is to talk from a historian, and my aunt is talking from her own experience as a child and what just horrific things. She brought back ashes from the gas chamber. And we had a memorial, a funeral for my grandmother in Santa Barbara. She made sure there was a Star David put in that. You know, basically that death camp would not be up there as a museum if it was basically just Jews that were there. They keep it up now, and they have it because there was different people that went, you know, that was put in those prisons. So it's all fancy now, grass there, and it's like a museum and all this stuff. But my Aunt Judy wanted to make sure that the dignity of the people that got the gas chamber, she took, you know, ashes from there, and they put a Star David there at that death camp, museum, and now it is. You know, it's nobody's going to make these statements like you speak about anything till people step up themselves in different groups. because, you know, I just don't, I think humanity is so far apart in recognizing how much we are just in commonality, that, and the fear and everything that goes on and the propaganda and everything. May there be peace soon, but I'm afraid it's going to be, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen, at least for not for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah, and Spielberg, Debbie Allen went to Spielberg when she wanted him to make Amistad about the slave trade and about the ship and about the case that John Adams did, because in the case of John Adams doing that case to free Sinkay and the Africans that were captured off of the coast of New York, what really was the thing was that he saw that story need to be told just as the same thing that he did with Schindler's List and about the Holocaust. And so
absolutely,
in this part of getting someone to tell our story, because once we found out about the case of the Amistad, there was a case before the Amistad called the Antelope, which was to defend and say that slavery was against the law of God but not against the law of man. Because when John Adams defended Sinkay and he argued before the Supreme Court, his father's bust was sitting there in that Supreme Court, but his father was the barrister that defended the British officer that killed Christmas Addicks to start the revolution. How many people know about the story?
I didn't.
Well,
A lot of people don't know a lot of things.
Go ahead, Lee.
No, I was going to say a lot of people don't know a lot of things, but I mean, I can just say it without knowing that horrific things has gone through humanity over and over and over and over again. It doesn't matter in what proportions, it's existing right now as we speak, and it. So
how do we stop,
you know,
that mess?
I'm not a historian. I'm an artist who lives in the moment and soaks things in and puts it back out, expresses, and all I can say is in my truth, and my honesty, I have fear about humanity because of things that I've known that's happened in history. So, you know, I don't have to know every fact to know that it exists. I know it unconditionally, but I also know that with that fear, me or anybody can be very vulnerable. And it took a lot of guts in my heart and soul to do this album and speak up, because of the fears I have that I carried for many years. Now I'm a 73-year-old man, and I ain't going to go to the grave and say, you know what, shame on you, Lee, you didn't express what was going on in your heart and soul. If you didn't do that, then you shouldn't be considered yourself an artist. So as artists, we express what goes on around us. As a politician, we in the pure sense of politician, a politician is supposed to monitor or see what the artist says or what is expressed. What is the community crying about? Oh, they need this or they need that. Let's make the product that's healthy for what their needs are. Politicians put policies in place so it could be healthy, organized environment. But all this other stuff, politicians got bad names, everybody got bad names, because there's so much mistrust because of the people that run stuff. It's for the wrong reasons. Let me just finish that one thing. Everything is greed in my mind, but there's only two kinds of greed. It's either short-term greed or long-term greed. And if you're honest and you want to live for your vision and that, it's got to be long-term greed. Most people don't have long-term greed. It's short-term greed. They take whatever they see at the moment, and they don't think about the bigger picture and what the world would be if you were kinder. So.
And I and it's one last thing, Bev, and I commend him because, you know, we're both elders. I'll be 72 on the 24th. And the part of it is that we're speaking to this in a way that we're no longer being the generational thief. Because as elders, we have to leave what we've learned in our existence time in order for the next generation, the next musicians, the next historians, the next researchers. You know, I commend Eric, because Eric finds the music. he is putting out there the people that have a historical thing. And same way with Bev. You know, you had, you know, Kim Weston, then you had Ray Fauntleroy. Is we've got to get these elders to speak, like you say about your aunt and her getting the ashes and being able to tell the story, not the historical writings, the truth that comes from the persons that lived it. And these
yes.
are the ways we're going to set ourselves free.
Amen. What is your name, sir? What
Thank
is your name? What is your name?
Kwame.
Sorry? Kwame?
Kwame, yes.
Kwame. I really, if I may just, I mean, I know we're in a show. I'd love to give you my email address, not to the world, but just to you. I'd love for you to reach back to me. I'd like to talk to you more.
Yeah, well, Bev has my information. Bev,
yeah,
you can give him my information.
Okay, thank you, Kwame. I'll email it to you, Lee. I'll give
okay.
you this information.
Yeah, man.
All right.
Much respect for your knowledge and what you're saying. Yes.
And thank both of y'all. Well, we're getting down to the end of time here. And Eric, do you have something you want to say before we go and I play the music?
I would love for our leader to take us out with a little something, if he would, on his moniker. And thank y'all so much for being here. You know, we've got a worldwide audience. My mom listened to some of the show. You know, big up to my family, man, to all our loved ones out there. Y'all take care of yourself. Be safe. And, you know, yeah, let's just reason with each other. You know, we've got a lot of differences, but when it all comes down to it, man, we're trying to eat and have a smile or two. And go out in nature as much as you can, man. Please, man, just be in nature and just live. Watch the creatures of nature want to mingle and meet you, man. They'll come up to you, right up to your face, have an experience with them. Just try it, man. Just try it. Our bodies are instruments. Don't forget that. We have a heartbeat and an eardrum and a spinal cord, vocal cords, all that. Thank you. Thank you,
Mr. Right.
Lee Oscar. Thank you, Beverly D.
Thank you. And thank
right.
Lee Oscar for coming and sitting on the porch with us tonight. And you brought your harmonica
yeah,
with you.
And big up D-Roll.
I like it, Beverly.
Okay, you got to take us out here.
I don't know what I was doing.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Live. That was live. Well, thank
live,
you again,
baby.
Lee Oscar. And we're going to leave out with some tunes from your new album, Never Forget. And we look forward to having
wow.
you back with us again. Thank you, Lee Oscar, for taking your time and your energy and your talent to join us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it too. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Better love, everyone. I will be back on tomorrow with Ray Futur. I guess I said his name right.
Love is
love.
Everywhere. Love is everywhere. Love is. Love is. Love is.
Good. The radio's still on. You're not here.